Hi there, and welcome to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we are visiting with some folks from the Forest Service. We have Ludi Bond, Christy Wampler, and Kesley Baker. Kesley's with the Division of Forestry, and both Christy and Ludi are with the Daniel Boone National Forest. Thank you guys so much for being here. I really appreciate
Thank you for having
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having us.
Now, it's really important that we talk about what we're going to talk about today. There is a lot going on in the state. We are in the midst of a drought. And let's update our listeners a little bit on the current wildfire situation. I know that last week we've had between 5 and 8 just in the Daniel Boone National Forest. But this is an issue that's happening across Kentucky.
Right. So with the Daniel Boone National Forest, since the beginning of September, when we really started entering the severe drought conditions, we've had approximately 15 or so wildfires that have occurred for approximately about 645 acres. So there have been a lot of fires that have occurred at different times and with different acreages throughout the Daniel Boone National Forest, throughout the four different districts that we have, the ranger districts on the forest.
As far as the Kentucky Division of Forestry, we operate mainly on the private lands. And in September, it was pretty much unprecedented. We had a total of 109 fire starts. And then so far in October, we have had 85 fire starts.
Is this more than normal? I mean, is it because the forest is so dry right now? Or is this kind of something that normally happens this time of year and we're just paying closer attention to it this year?
You know, what's kind of interesting with natural disasters, they're cyclical throughout our country. We see that. There's really no normal anymore. It's all cyclical and weather dependent. So all of these occurrences that we see, not just here in Kentucky and the southeastern United States and throughout the country, it's all weather dependent, depending on what we have going on.
And it's much drier. It's much drier now than it typically is this time of year. So it is something that's a little bit unusual compared to the past couple of years. But it is, as Ludi mentioned, it is cyclical. In 2016, we were seeing really similar fire behavior.
And that's the year that Gatlinburg burned
exactly.
down.
Right, everybody remembers that's when Kentucky, Tennessee, northern Georgia, North Carolina, the whole southeast was on fire back in 2016. And one of the things that we look at in the wildland firefighting community are our climatological analyses and indices. And when you're making your predictions on fire behavior and fire activity, you kind of look at the past. So some of the things that we've been comparing to right now, looking at those indices, we know that compared to now in 2019 to this same time back in 2016, we are much drier. Now, what's been nice is we've seen those short period, short duration rains that have been coming through, which has decreased fire activity, but it has not brought us out of that extended drought. Here in Kentucky, we were going on over 40 days without any rain before we saw the first little bit of rain coming through with some precipitation. So when we look at our fuels that burn, you know, the fine fuels are grasses that actually ignite the easiest, and that's what will carry fire through the woods from point A to point B, or from your campfire or from your burn pile over into the woods. So those are the ones that will accept the moisture the easiest. Those are also the ones that dry out the quickest. We need that extended rain. We need a time period where we're going to have some significant rainfall over an extended duration, and that's really what's going to make the difference in what we call our 10, 100, and 1,000-hour fuels, your logs, your trees, things like that. And the predictions are saying, unfortunately, that the southeast will not be out of that extended drought until sometime in December.
Because the weather has been so dry and it's easier to get fires started, but are people being more, I mean, are you finding that these fires are started by humans being not careful?
Absolutely. I think that's something that in eastern Kentucky in particular, people are really, really comfortable with prescribed fire. They're used to burning their fields. They're used to burning trash or burning debris on their property. And so when we get into this extreme drought, you know, right now the majority of the Daniel Boone is sitting at about 5 inches below normal rainfall. But then there are other parts that are a little above normal rainfall. And so when people are really comfortable with fire as a tool, they sometimes forget that that is all weather dependent, and that when the weather changes, we have to change our behavior. And so people who are used to being able to burn debris, burn trash, that is something that with this extreme drought right now, we maybe aren't going to be able to do and have to be a lot more careful about. And then in addition to that, we do have several of these fires that were caused by abandoned campfires. And so that's just something where all the time, no matter what, we really need people to be cognizant of how to properly put out a fire and do that responsibly, no matter what the weather is. But some of these other fires that have been caused by escape trash or debris burning, you know, those are things that people are used to being able to do and may just have to modify their behavior this time of year.
Now, I knew that particularly here at Morehead State University, we're located in Rowan County, which is smack dab in the middle of the Daniel Boone National Forest. Rowan County had a burn ban, but the county lifted their burn ban after a day of rain. Mm-hmm. How does that affect you guys?
Yeah, the county judge executives, they get to choose whether or not they do a countywide burn ban. And a lot of times they lift those just because businesses, farmers rely on burning, just like Christy said, you know, people, you know, rely on that as a tool. Mm-hmm. So they're a little hesitant as to, you know, keep it on for so long. They try to lift it as they can. But if conditions worsen, they can always put that ban back on if need to.
Mm-hmm. And it does make it kind of interesting for our messaging, letting people know we still have fire restrictions on the Daniel Boone National Forest. Now, the cause of wildfires on the Daniel Boone, you know, we're focusing a lot on those abandoned campfires. When we say abandoned, that kind of has a negative connotation. But as Chrissy was alluding to, there's a lot of times people think their campfire is out, completely out, because they're not seeing any visible smoke or flame, but there's so much heat underneath it. So we need to make sure that we're conveying that message to people that they need to be extra cautious and extra careful. And as soon as we do feel, fire officials feel in the forest that it's an appropriate time to lift those restrictions, we certainly will. You know, and I'm going to kind of relate back to and refer back to those indices that we're looking at. These short-term rain showers are what we have been calling kind of a lull in the battle. We haven't won the war against the wildfire conditions that Kentucky is going to see. So we know that that's coming. So while it has provided us with a temporary relief from additional new fire starts, and we're able to get the existing fires contained and controlled, we do know that we're going to be back in these drought conditions. You know, we've had some of these rain showers come through, and then the next day, we've had beautiful, sunshiny weather, we've had lower humidities, some winds come along with that. And what's also happened with these winds and this rain, the leaf off around here, there's more fuel on the forest floor to burn. Mm-hmm. So we have additional fuel available for any new fire starts to feed on, and that certainly is a concern.
So if I live here, I mean, my backyard is the National Forest, essentially. If I'm interested in burning some debris in my backyard, where can I find the information? Like, how do I know if it's safe or not?
Now, you can always check the Kentucky Division of Forestry Facebook page, and then there is also a website that you can go to, www.weather.gov/JKL/fire. Now, that website has up-to-date information on weather forecasts as far as eastern Kentucky, and it also lists the burn bans. It has a link for the burn bans and red flag warnings.
And for the National Forest, our Facebook page is also, the Daniel Boone National Forest Facebook page is a good place to check, because, you know, even as you mentioned, the county burn bans may be lifted. And so if you check out that website and it shows that the county you're in no longer has a burn ban, but if you're going to the National Forest to camp somewhere, you still need to check and see what our burn ban looks like and what our restrictions are. So, you know, it kind of depends on if you're on your private property, you want to look to those county sites. But if you know you're going to be headed out to the forest to go camping or something, even within that county, you want to check the Forest Service page.
Right. And speaking of, even though some of the counties have lifted their burn bans, there is still a forest fire season. Mm-hmm. It goes from October 1st to December 15th. And during that time, you cannot burn between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. if you're within 150 feet of the woodlands. And most Kentuckians, especially around here, especially if you live near the Daniel Boone, you're not going to be, you know, 150 feet away.
Right. I think there are places in downtown Moorhead that are still
yes,
like less than 150 yeah. feet away from the forest. It is such a, I mean, I've seen deer walk down Main Street here. It is mm-hmm. a very rural place, even though it's a city. And a lot of people don't realize, I mean, even if you're just having a bonfire in your backyard, that's, you know, friends over and it's the great, you know, football season, it's that time yeah. of year. But really, it can cause a big problem really fast.
Absolutely.
We do need to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
Moorhead State Public Radio keeps you connected. WMKY is live online at wmky.org. Local, state, national news and archive programs, including Health Matters, Open Mic, Mountain Edition, and the Reader's Notebook. Tell your smart speaker to play Moorhead State Public Radio. Download our phone app and follow us on Facebook. Moorhead State Public Radio keeps you connected to your community. WMKY's live web stream is online at wmky.org.
And we're back here on Open Mic here on Moorhead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with some forest fire ladies. We've got United States Forest Service
Public Information Officers.
United States Forest Service Public Information Officers Ludi Bond and Christy Wampler and Kesley Baker from the Kentucky Division of Forestry here to talk about wildfires. Guys, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
I wanted to talk a little bit about deterrence for people burning. I know some people think, oh, it's no big deal. I'll handle this. I can keep it under control when they're burning debris or garbage in their backyard or using the fire as a tool for farming or industry. But there can be some serious repercussions if you're burning in a band, in an area that has a burn ban. Let's talk a little bit about the fines if you're caught just burning, even if it is on private property.
So I'll speak to the federal side, and then I'll let Kesley speak to the state fines, because they're actually, you can be fined at both levels. So mm-hmm. we've had some fires that started on private property as a result of someone burning trash and then spilled over to federal. And so in that instance, you know, you have basically two jurisdictions. On the federal side, we have different levels of enforcement. Our law enforcement officers can write tickets if they see a campfire, even if you're right there with your campfire, but if it's under a burn restriction, as we are right now, where you're only allowed to have a fire in certain types of settings. So right now, you can only have a fire in a developed campground with a metal fire ring. So if they come across you with a fire somewhere outside of that, they can write a ticket. And right now, because we're in such high level restrictions, we actually have additional law enforcement officers on the forest helping with that enforcement. So it's not just our normal staff. We have other resources helping with those fines. So a ticket for having a fire in a restricted area is one possibility. If that fire actually results in a wildfire, you can also be charged criminally, and that can result in cost, suppression cost, where you might actually have to bear the cost of coming in and putting out that fire, which can be very expensive. And that can get very expensive very quickly, and that it's all determined by a judge's ruling on how much you're going to be fined. So, you know, that exact number could really get steep quickly.
Because we're not just talking about the people who are located in the particular office near where you started the fire. We're talking about bringing people from outside. There are other states, even other countries, that are coming to help with these forest fires. And then also the destruction of property. You know, the national forest is something we can't really grow back very quickly.
Absolutely. So, and there's times where that includes aviation resources. So you can imagine if you have to start bringing in helicopters or tankers for those fires, that also adds to the cost.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Never even considered that. Now, as far as locally here at the state level, Daniel Boone National Forest level, what comes into play when we're talking about fines there?
The state does it very similarly. We also get assistance from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and our rangers and the Fish and Wildlife rangers are able to go and cite citations. And if, say, for example, if you are burning debris on your own property, but that fire escapes and causes damage to someone else's property, you are liable for that, and you are also liable for the suppression costs.
Mm-hmm. So, now, we would like to think that people coming to visit the Daniel Boone National Forest or other natural areas around Kentucky are there visiting because they truly appreciate the natural environment, the natural resources, the natural areas in and around the beautiful state of Kentucky. So we would certainly hope that their mindset is not to intentionally do anything that would cause some destruction in and near the forest. But many of these things are accidental, as we mentioned before. It's just that they don't really know that what they're doing could certainly cause a wildfire. Now, some of the fires that we've seen on the Daniel Boone have caused issues with the natural resources. I shouldn't say they've certainly impacted and affected natural resources and archaeological areas throughout the Daniel Boone. So Christy can probably speak to more about what's going on, what the impacts have been, and then what we're doing to help rehab those areas.
Yeah, so in addition to the possibility of being fined, Ludi's exactly right. We also want people to think about what that does, what those damages might be. And so there are a number of areas that have had impacts as a result of these fires. You know, when we're using fire as a tool and we're within those parameters that we talk about looking at, a little bit higher relative humidities and lower temperatures, those fires aren't as hot and they don't cause as much damage. We're looking for really specific results when we use prescribed fire. But a wildfire usually comes in and causes damages that are outside of what we would normally want to see. And so as far as archaeological resources, you know, we've had in the Red River Gorge, that entire area is a natural heritage area. And so there are a number of archaeological sites that can be exposed because of losing those layers of soil and vegetation. And then in addition to that, just the soil and vegetation damage itself, you know, places like Skybridge remain closed right now because we're going to have to let that area recover. So places that people love and enjoy recreating and want to be able to enjoy, we can't allow people into until they're safe, for one thing, because of hazard trees and things like that. But then also until we've identified all of these either archaeological or natural resource issues and sort of mitigated them. So.
Well, what can we do as people who enjoy the forest, what can we do to help prevent these fires? Because, I mean, obviously education and knowing how to properly care for campfires if you're out in the forest, or just not burning when you're not supposed to. But are there other things that we can do as good stewards of the forest?
Well, the majority of fires that we are responding to as wildland firefighters here in Kentucky, the primary cause is human. Not a lot of lightning here in Kentucky, so they're not natural caused. So we know that every one of those human-caused fires could have been prevented. So Kesley can probably speak to more of all the various causes that they have, that they respond to.
Yes, as far as the state, the majority of our fires are actually arson. So, and we do have people patrolling to, you know, cite those people. But really, as far as accidents, it's just putting out your fire properly, whether it's a campfire, a debris fire, or someone, you know, having fun around the fire pit, you know, in their backyard. We actually did a demonstration with how to put out your campfire just recently. And just as an example, it took 3 buckets of water to put out that campfire properly. So a lot of people think, you know, a few bottles of water and you're good, but no, it's going to take a lot more water, you know, to put it out.
Overkill is a good thing when you're pouring water on a campfire.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, to your question about what else we can do, you know, Kesley mentioned human-caused, intentional versus unintentional. So that whole, if you see something, say something. So that's a big piece of it. The education, as you mentioned, is a big piece of it. But I think just beyond that, it's understanding how fire works a little bit. You know, we don't expect everybody to be fire ecologists, but I think that if people could spend a little time educating themselves about fire in eastern Kentucky, I think that that would help people understand when we put these berm restrictions in place, you know, we're not intentionally trying to limit how much they enjoy the national forest. We want people to come out and enjoy the national forest, but there is a lot of science and a lot of data that goes into making these decisions. They're not made lightly. They're not made carelessly. You know, those decisions are based on a lot of experts and a lot of expertise and a lot of data that's been collected, sometimes over hundreds of years looking at weather data. So just understanding that and respecting those berm restrictions is a big part of it. So being careful when you do have a fire, but respecting the restrictions and understanding why they're there.
Right. Now, you spoke about like Skybridge being closed in order to rehabilitate that area. Mm-hmm. Can you guys tell me a little bit about what it takes to because it's not like, oh, this is going to be closed for a season.
Right.
This could be years.
Yeah, it all depends on the intensity of the fire. And a lot of times, the gorge is an area, everybody who's been there knows the topography of the gorge. And so the steeper the slope, the more potential you have for erosion issues, for soil health issues, and the harder it can be to reestablish vegetation. So depending on the intensity of the fire and where that fire burned is going to determine how long that area has to remain closed. And then also areas like Skybridge, they absorb a lot of recreational impacts. And so sometimes a place that is heavily visited, we have to leave closed a little bit longer because we know how many people are going to visit and how much of that vegetation is going to be trampled versus an area in the middle of the wilderness. We may not really have to close it because two or three people might go to that area in a year. Mm-hmm. But Skybridge is an example where we get a lot of visitation and we know that. So it may have to actually stay open longer and allow that vegetation to reestablish. But then in addition to that, that's just talking about the damage that the fire itself caused, where you're trying to reestablish vegetation in order to prevent soil erosion and other soil health issues. But then you also have the damage that's caused by us trying to contain that fire. We have to put in fire lines. Sometimes that's done by hand. Sometimes that's done with a bulldozer. And it all depends on what that fire behavior is, how hard we have to hit that initial attack. And so that also has to be rehabilitated. And that's another area where we have potential for damaging or exposing archaeological resources. You know, they go in and put in a fire line, they might expose a heritage site that now has to be cataloged. It has to be a full survey. They have different phase one, phase two surveys that have to be done based on how significant that site was. And that site may have been protected and underground, and now all of a sudden it's exposed. And we have to catalog it and we have to submit that information to the state agencies. So all of those things take time, and it's not just the damage caused by the fire. It's what we had to do to get the resources in there to put that fire out or to contain it. Those also have to be rehabilitated. And so all of that takes time.
Mm-hmm. And people who live in and near and around the Daniel Boone and other natural areas know that as wildfires move through, the forest will heal itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's something that we know takes time for natural regeneration to occur. Wildfires, as well as prescribed fires, but more with wildfires, they will burn in a mosaic pattern. So not everything is total consumption when a fire moves through, but it has burned off that initial duff layer, exposing the mineral soil. But we're going to need some of the some humidity and some rain to come back. And so now some of the various plant communities will now naturally regenerate and come back, but that does take time. Mm-hmm. It might take a few years. So that's another reason to make sure we're educating folks and letting them know to tread lightly, take only pictures, leave only footprints. That's a good rule of thumb in all natural areas throughout our beautiful world, and that's something that we need to understand and appreciate.
We do hope that this show will help people kind of understand a little bit more, but that is actually all the time that we have for today. Public Information Officers Ludi Bond and Christy Wampler with the Daniel Boone National Forest and Kesley Baker with the Kentucky Division of Forestry. Thank you guys again for being here on the show.
Thank you for having us.
And for our listeners, we'll see you on Friday.